The Discovery of Britain, An Accidental History, by Graham Robb, read by Mark Meadows. To Starling Lawrence and Peter Strauss. Chapter 1. Off Course. In the autumn of 2018, my wife Margaret and I returned from a French cycling expedition to find one half of Great Britain cut off from the other. We had taken the Scotland-bound train from London Euston. It was still running to time when the first signs of devastation appeared shortly after the Watford Gap. This is the nearly invisible pass in the middle of England where the Grand Union Canal, the London and North Western Railway, a Roman road and the M1 motorway converge. Sheep stood numbly in flooded fields. Trees were teetering or horizontal. In the quiet coach, an over-amplified metallic screaming reached us from a distant part of the train. Someone seemed to be shouting at us from an exposed footplate next to a fireman shoveling coal. We and our fellow passengers hazarded an interpretation of the noise. The card reader was broken, and only cash would be accepted at the onboard shop. Then came a second, barely audible announcement, informing us that we would be lucky to reach Preston. An Atlantic hurricane named Ali by the Irish Meteorological Service had closed motorways, snapped overhead cables, precipitated landslides, killed someone in Cheshire, and caused all train services between Preston and Scotland to be cancelled. A gale was still blowing, and high-sided trucks were still being toppled. The ease with which the island of Great Britain can be cut in half was noted by the Nazi invasion planners in 1940. The only two lines between England and Scotland pass through Carlisle and Newcastle. It is no exaggeration to say that destruction of these two stations would interrupt all rail traffic between Scotland and England. Later that day, as the sun rushed to bed in a distant place behind the battlements of a medieval castle, having no light by which to read, I had the idea for this book. I imagined a social, geographical, and political history of the British Isles based on the evidence of natives, nomads, invaders, and immigrants, the mighty and the impotent, the blindingly famous, and the utterly obscure. The narrator would refer to his own self-inflicted or unavoidable experience as a child and young adult. He would recall the muddled mystery of events, but having what he had apparently called a good rememberer, he would not feel the need to reminisce. No creature or nation lives life in chronological order, and so there would be room for the surprising contractions, dilations, and reversals of time. Just as a naturalist would never refer to only one era when describing a landscape, the ages of this four-dimensional history would not begin on a certain day and then, when they ended, end forever. On that day of devastation and delay, it struck me that our most rewarding adventures and uprootings had been the result of accidents. The collapse of a canal path on a transnational cycle route, a dead body on a railway line, the geological events which placed a mountain pass in one place rather than another, and all the other mishaps and strokes of luck produced by the two-wheeled time machine which has been our sole means of private locomotion for the last 40 years. At the Victorian railway station of Preston, in the county of Lancashire, passengers had been detraining since early afternoon. It looked like the mass evacuation scene in a war film. Women were dictating shopping lists and simple recipes into mobile phones. No replacement buses were running, and none would have taken bicycles anyway. The next train for Scotland would not leave until breakfast the following day. Preston is the mill town which Charles Dickens used as a model for Coketown in his novel of social and industrial misery, Hard Times. It was a town of red brick, or of brick that would have been red if the smoke and ashes had allowed it. Margaret and I both knew something of Preston and did not want to spend the night in it. We found a member of the platform staff and told her that we had to reach Carlisle in time to cycle the 18 miles to our home on the Anglo-Scottish border, where a night without a moon means total